When I was in sixth grade, one day after school, my teacher called me to her desk. She was holding a shirt box, and inside were several silvery BBs. She shook the box, and when the little balls rolled into one another, they didn't make even the tiniest clicking sounds, and they didn't bounce off one another. Like a miracle, they joined together to form larger balls. And when they bonked into the sides of the box, they broke into bazillions of tinier balls. My teacher said this was quicksilver. At one point, she tilted the box to get all the little balls to join into a single ball, rolled it into her hand, and told me to put out my hand. When she rolled it into mine, I was struck by how cool to the touch it was, and how bizarre and beautiful this liquid metal was. When we were done playing with it, our hands had a strange residue, like tarnished silver, but I'm not sure whether I washed my hands or not before heading home. A couple of times after that, our family fever thermometer broke, and I poured whatever mercury was still in the tube into a small bowl to play with the quicksilver. If I wanted, I could have even bought tiny bottles of mercury at our local hobby shop. Even back then in the early 60s, people knew that mercury was dangerous, but it's not surprising that neither my teacher nor I grew sick. The toxic form of mercury, methylmercury, is formed through interactions in the environment. Now, of course, teachers know better than to handle mercury in their bare hands or give it to a child, but we still allow mercury to accumulate at higher and higher concentrations in the environment. Coal-burning power plants spew it into the atmosphere, and since so many consumer products still contain mercury, garbage incinerators add to the problem. The National Wildlife Federation produced a great flyer about mercury in household products, available free on the internet and linked to on birderblog.com. The list of mercury-laden products is huge. A few of the items are irons with an automatic shutoff switch, refrigerators and American-made automobiles which have mercury in their door switches, laptops and some computer monitors, and fluorescent light bulbs. Every time one of these items is broken or thrown in the garbage, mercury can escape into the environment. For many decades, people assumed that atmospheric mercury washed by rain into lakes, rivers, and streams was a more significant problem than mercury washed onto land. It was easy to measure the high levels of methylmercury in fish and water birds, and because we eat fish, our concern naturally focused on this demonstrable danger. But it turns out that mercury falling on land gets converted into methylmercury and gets into the food chain too. A study just released shows that 100% of 178 woodland songbirds sampled in New York State had unusually high levels of mercury in their blood and feathers. Worst affected was the wood thrush. The population of wood thrushes has declined 45% in recent decades, and sure enough, this species had higher mercury levels than any other species tested. The research suggests that when mercury falls on land, it is absorbed by soil and by fallen leaves that are consumed by worms and insects. Songbirds then feed on the bugs, absorbing the converted methylmercury. Wood thrushes had an average of 0.1 parts per million of mercury in their blood. That's below the federal safe standard for fish, 0.3 parts per million, but high enough to affect the bird's reproductive cycle. Since songbirds are one of the most effective controls on forest insect infestations, this bodes ill not only for the thrushes, but also for us. Production of For the Birds is supported by KUMD and binoculars.com. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.